Hello, it is the Productize Podcast. I've got a good one for you today. I'm talking to Mike Rubini. This is an interesting conversation, and it came about in probably one of my favorite ways that these podcast interviews come about. Mike replied to one of my email newsletters where I ask subscribers, you know, what are you currently working on? And so he hit reply on that email and came right to my inbox, and he gave me a couple of lines about what he's working on. And I was like, wow, that looks really interesting. And that's because I checked out his website, which is rubini.solutions, and it looks like he's working on 8 or 10 different SaaS products. And there's also a couple of service businesses in there. And I'm like, how does one guy do all of this? And that's basically the question that I wanted to ask him today. And so, you know, we really got into a lot of interesting things. His story of how he went from being a jazz musician to launching a service for jazz musicians, and then really going deep on what he calls microdata. And he shared a really interesting process for how he finds a market opportunity, finds a need from potential customers, builds a new SaaS product, software product in a day or two, and then actually launches it to paying customers within a couple of days. It's a really interesting process, something that he continues to repeat. And then we also talked about how he runs his operation very, very efficiently using SOPs, obviously something that I'm a big fan of, and keeping his team actually very, very lean. So we talked about some interesting ways that he goes about doing that. Yeah, this is a really interesting one. Here is my interview with Mike Rubini. Enjoy. All right, I'm here with Mike Rubini. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, my pleasure, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm super excited to talk with you. I'm a listener of your podcast, this podcast, and the other one with Jordan from a long time.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. Thanks for doing it. And I mean, the way that I found out about you is you replied to one of my email newsletters and gave me some info about what you're working on. It looked really interesting to me. And I thought, well, I want to kind of hear more about your story and pick your brain a little bit. So this is great.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
And so you are you're talking to me. You're from Italy.
Yeah, I'm from Italy, and I'm soon relocating to Lisbon, Portugal. But yeah, I'm based in Italy now.
Very cool. Which city are you in?
Oh, I'm from southern Italy. So if you know, Italy is like a boot, right? I'm from the hill of the boot. The region is called Puglia. It's beautiful, and especially this time of the year. But I'm from the like a small hamlet here in southern Italy, around Bari is the main city around here, and the hamlet is called Sovereto. It's about 100 people, more or less.
Sounds beautiful. I mean, I was saying earlier, been, you know, half my family, you know, comes from Italy, and it's just been one of those things that, like, my wife and I just want to get there someday. It's on the list. Once we're allowed out of our houses over here.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, all of my friends that come visit, they, you know, they are very surprised because they said to me, you know, Italy is crazy. Every city has a story, and the food is great. So I can't complain. But just taxes, man. That's the thing. But, yeah, everything else is great.
Yeah, cool. So, you know, the thing that immediately stuck out to me about your story and looking at your website and everything is that, you know, you're doing many things. You're working on it looks like mostly SaaS software businesses, but I see a long list of them here listed on your website. So how do you sort of like explain to people what you do today?
Yeah, I run multiple profitable SaaS, which I bootstrap alone and with no team. That's how I explain it.
No team, even on all the different things?
No team. I just have two VAs right now.
Okay. And so just looking at your website here, I'm seeing around, 10 different businesses? Maybe you have even more than that?
Yeah.
Or maybe some of them you've exited?
Yeah. So all of the SaaS that I build are around this concept of collecting and organizing data. So the problem in general is that, like, as operators, we have too much data and it's all over the place, basically. So there's an opportunity there, and that's what I do. Like, all of my SaaS are around this concept. And then I have some principles that I try to follow, which are the first one is velocity. So I try to go to market as fast as I can. And I'm known to build fast. Like I can build pretty fast. And the other
principle. And you're a software developer, I assume?
Yeah, yeah. I can code. I'm not like graduating in CS or anything like that. I'm actually, my background is as a musician. I'm a jazz musician.
Oh, nice.
Typical. Yes. I know you are a musician, right?
I am. Yeah. A little bit of jazz, but mostly, you know, rock stuff. And
yeah.
I used to be more serious about it. Now it's much more of just a hobby.
I understand. I mean, for me, like, I say that music is my first job, but, you know, revenue-wise is the other way around, unfortunately. But I when I started out, I actually started in New York because I was studying abroad, actually jazz at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music in New York on a scholarship. I was a scholarship holder. And I realized, you know, there were many amazing musicians just playing for like literally a pizza. And so you know, I said I have to do something because I love to play and play jazz, but I also want to have a good life. And the opportunity there, it seems like you either go teach or you do weddings or you do things like to pay your dues, they say, right? And I wanted to do that, but also I wanted to protect my art, so I said, you know, let me do something else and, you know, protect my art and do whatever I want to do with it that I really want to do. And so with that, like I started out by basically with an agency. Basically, I was delivering also the projects. And the projects were around, you know, social media management, basically, and the niche that I was into was jazz musicians because I didn't know better, right?
Yeah, so like social media, marketing, web design.
Yeah, exactly.
For jazz musicians. And so for listeners listening, I mean, your main website is rubini.solutions, and there's stuff about you and kind of listing out all of your different products. And then this one that we're talking about here, I guess, is jazz.services.
Exactly. And
great domain name for that.
Yeah, thank you. It wasn't called.
What year was this? Like, when were you in New York, and when did
2011?
Okay, and then this jazz services, like, when did this start?
It started basically right away in 2011. In the semester that I was abroad, I just did a semester there because they didn't recognize my diploma. I was already graduated in Italy. But anyways, to cut the story short, I see this situation and I see this opportunity, and we started helping jazz musicians and jazz brands, and that went very well. Initially I was doing everything myself, and then I encountered outsourcing on my way, so I started outsourcing part of the work, and really well. I was doing at some point, you know, 4 or 5K a month, doing my basically web design work and social media management thing.
Very cool. And so, like today, 9 years later, is this jazz services still running with clients and everything?
Yeah, it's still running. We have a lot of not a lot, but a little bit of clients that are still with us, as well with that the other like 8 brand agency that I built, which was called, it is still called geeks.co, and that one is about startups, and we have a little bit of clients. We have some inbound requests coming in, but very little revenue, so I really don't count on that revenue. It's just maintaining as of now.
Okay, so actually, yeah, like that's what I'd like to try to get an understanding of, you know, with people like you who have many different things going on. It, from what I can see here, it looks like those are the two service businesses, and then the rest of them are SaaS products.
Yeah.
But for these two services, like, is it essentially like the same service business, but you just sort of have like two different front end websites, like one aimed at jazz musicians and the other aimed at startups, but you kind of have like the same people doing the services?
Not really. So okay. For jazz services, we partnered with a lot of people in the industry. So what I did that I thought was smart at the time, you know, was partnering with people who do, for example, radio plays, who do management. So, you know, it's basically I was upselling their packages as well, and they were, you know, referring me for web design and stuff like that. So that actually turned out good, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, it's a completely different thing, music and startups, right? So with music, like you found some services where they help promote them on like radio and stuff like that, and then you kind of resell them.
Exactly.
Very cool.
It's about finding vendors and you know, a network of people that you trust, and that can totally like they can work to give a you know, a good picture to the artist. Or where on about when and where it it can go, you know, because we have some artists that were doing great, and I did a lot of things. I did some e-commerce stuff as well. So I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't as organized as it was in the late years that I was doing that actively. But yeah, at some point, I just said, you know, I can code. So let's also take advantage of that. And I never looked back, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm definitely going to, you know, dive into the coding and SaaS stuff in just a minute here. I guess I'm just still a little bit wondering about, you know, because I know that there are a lot of listeners of this podcast who are in services, whether they're freelancers, they're running agencies, productized services, and maybe they want to scale those up, but maybe they want to do what you've done and what I've done also, which is like take the service business, but then... Mm-hmm. Pivot your time and your focus into other types of products. Are you still, or over these years, how involved are you in the service side of it? I mean, I know that you're outsourcing a lot of the delivery, the work, reselling other people's services, but even things like inbound leads and sales and follow-ups. Mm-hmm. And then what about like when a client has a question or isn't mm-hmm. happy with the service or something like that? Does that stuff reach your inbox?
Yeah, so for support, they reach out to me because they know me personally for, you know, from the initial phase, basically, because a lot of clients still remain the same. You know, they refer me to other clients, to other clients they have, because I also work with agencies. So, you know, these people have clients and they refer to me. And so I work with them and they become the contact point for the clients. So sometimes, a lot of times it's like that. So the support stuff still reaches to me, but again, right now it's just maintaining, so it's not a lot of requests.
Got it. You're not doing a lot of like new sales. It's just
I mean, sometimes they get inbound, but to be honest, when I receive something inbound, if it's not 100% what I want to do, I just decline it. To be honest,
yeah.
Right now, because I'm focused on SaaS right now. But through the years, I outsourced a lot of things, and I know you have a software on SOPs, so I'm big on that because that literally changed the way that I work. For SOPs, I think there are two approaches there. You can hire people that hopefully know more than you, or they know their job really well. For cheap, because you can obviously hire them in countries where the dollar or the euro is stronger. And the other approach is, you know, hire people that literally have a connection and they know some English, you know, and then write very good SOPs and like just like treat them. And it's gonna sound bad, but treat them like a robot and just give them directions that they can follow. And you know, I'm big on SOPs because I outsource last because I mean, I love the convenience of outsourcing, but these days because I can't code, right? So I can automate a lot of stuff, and usually my process is I try to optimize and then I try to automate, meaning have a machine do the thing, and then if I really need that human, then I outsource. So that's the process there.
Absolutely. I mean, I do think of outsourcing, as you said, like with SOPs and delegating to people carrying out the tasks. I, I really do view that as a form of automation. And, you know, there are always steps, especially in a service business, but this happens even in other types of businesses. Like there's always going to be things that do need a human touch or a human communication to someone else. But all of that can and should still follow a process. You know, it shouldn't be, to take the jazz metaphor, like they shouldn't be like improvising every single time they're talking to a client or every single time they're designing a web page. It maybe requires some creative skill or some analysis or things like that, but that should still follow a process. And, and I see that as like a form of automation, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with you. And one thing that made me think a lot lately is that you reach through outsourcing, really, when a random person on the street can do that task, right? Which is useful if you adopt the second approach that I mentioned earlier, the one about the robot. And with that, I actually experimented a little bit. So, for example, for my SaaS, we have support, and right now it is not run like this. But previously, I had basically four Filipino families doing 24-hour shifts to cover all the support for my SaaS. And one way that I basically did this random person on the street approach was using something called Get Magic. So this is a service that I tried, and they basically assign you 15 people from Philippines, and they bill you by the minute. And so what I did, I used Talk2, which is a an intercom type of chat on like a live chat on the website. And what I did, I basically, I had people on the chat, and then that would trigger a Slack alert on our Slack channel, and then Get Magic would take over. So I was only paying them for like active minutes that they were working on the chat.
And this is for the like customer support on your SaaS products.
Exactly. So this is just an example of how you can do it. Yeah, and I would just.
That does sound very efficient. It's not like you're just hiring, even though like hiring someone in say like the Philippines or somewhere like it's obviously much lower rate. But what a lot of companies do is they just hire them like full time hours or even like part time, but like set hours. This is like they're literally just working the minutes where they're taking support requests.
Exactly. And I mean, they have a flat fee. I think it's like $40 per month. So really low. But I basically, I think it was, via their Talk2 API that I did it. And that would trigger a message in Slack. And then they would go and take care of the conversation with the customers and obviously following SOPs. So that was a cool process.
So let's jump back to today and talk about the SaaS businesses. And then I'm going to go back in the story again and how you started like building these out. But like, you know, as you said, a lot of them share the theme of it's for managing large amounts of data. So I'm seeing like usecart.com, microacquisitions.com, Grouply, Trendly, Target Bear, Fast Lean, a couple of other ones. So like among all these different SaaS businesses, are there like one or two that are like your primary focus or primary source of revenue? Or
absolutely. So if you go like one of my pillars, one of my concept that I really work with. Is transparency. So I'm big on transparency as well. So if you go actually on any of my sites, including the main one, if you go /open, you will see all the metrics and like for revenue wise and also app wise for my SaaS. So that's available to everyone because I work in the open, just like you, I think. And so I think now.
Oh, look at that. All right. I'm just like loading it up right now. So.
I think there's now Trendly that does about $1,000 a month. UseCart, I think, does $1,000 a month, more or less. Then there are other software that are free and they act as lead generation. for my other SaaS. So these days I actually build, you know, either I build via negativa, so by subtracting features, and we can talk about that if you want, or I build via, you know, by piggybacking on existing communities, especially around courses.
Okay, so I mean, I'm going to have questions for you about marketing and everything, but just, you know, for the listeners, you know, who aren't necessarily looking at this page right now, I'll just give them some of the info.
Absolutely, go ahead.
And this is in Euro, is that right?
Yeah, Euro, yes.
So I'm seeing a list of 7 different SaaS products that you have laid out in a table, and you've got all different metrics here, like MRR, churn rate, growth rate, number of users. This is really fantastic, man. But the so like total MRR, I'm seeing 2,800 euro. Let's see, monthly profit 1,200 euro. This is really impressive.
Thank you.
And then you've got a table for goals, which is also pretty cool. So especially if anybody's kind of like following along with your progress, this is nice.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I could see how this must be very useful for you too.
Yeah, I use this all the time. And then you can go to the product URL and also do /open. And I'm so big on transparency that I also have an API you can ping if you want, if you are that crazy and get the numbers. But yeah, so right now the total MRR is more like around 4K, and that's 4K euro, and that's all the MRR collectively of the software plus a little bit of consulting. But then on some software, namely the one that I do with existing communities, I have partners, so I take a cut of the MRR. So my total MRR right now is around 3,295 euros. That's just for me. And then my profit, which is, you know, net of costs and taxes, around $1,200 per month.
Got it. And, you know, this is also a good illustration for people who have never really worked on a SaaS before. You know, so many people, especially coming from services, you know, they think about how expensive it is to run services and paying people and all that. And oh, the dream is to build a software product and it has no costs and you just get subscription revenue and then it's fantastic. But of course, that's not the case. I mean, SaaS does have costs.
And then, I mean, this approach as, you know, of running multiple software really has a lot of benefits. So namely, one is sharing expenses because you can share, you know, the same tools through, you know, for any of the software. And then also it gives you, you know, multiple lottery tickets. And that's also something to think about, I think. And then you can decide, like, for example, I had one of my software, which is called Scrapebook. You know, in the last years, it was doing 3-5K a month. But then I decided to discontinue it. So now it's at about 450 euros per month because I'm not actively like marketing it, and I wanted to discontinue because it wasn't so ethical in my world anymore. So I'm just discontinuing it. But you know, then I have other software where like I'm lighting up the fire, right?
Yeah, it looks like you kind of like shift back and forth in your focus, and then that sort of gets reflected in the revenue.
Yeah, exactly. You can choose your own path here.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I definitely relate to that because right now I'm primarily focused on Process Kit, and part of the reason for that is that Process Kit has traction. It's the thing that I'm most interested in, and so I. Currently here in 2020, I've begun to really focus on that. Obviously, Audience Ops is still running and very significant for me as well. But if I go back a year or two, 3 years ago, people who've been following my work know that I've been doing other things too. Like there was Sunrise KPI and there was Ops Calendar and there was all these different, and the productized course and everything. And that you said like having multiple bets. I think that was one of the things that, you know, because with SaaS, it does take so much more work and time in order to initially build and grow early traction, much slower than a service business. And so it could take 6 months or a year before you even know if this is going to work or not. And there's a lot of uncertainty. And so that's what always led me to having my hands in a few different products. So at least I'm not...
I don't agree with you, because like if my software are not profitable in the first week, I just cut them. Like I just cut the software that are not profitable.
First week.
All my software generally are profitable on day one.
So tell me more about that. So do you mean like you put up a page to kind of like pre-sell the concept before you start building it?
Oh, this day I just do it. Usually my time to market is 2 days. So I take like a Saturday and Sunday and I do the software. I build the software. And then I go to the market. And then usually, you know, I'm pretty good now to spot opportunities. And also I know my audience. And usually it's profitable in the first day, which means I at least cover costs, which for me are, as I mentioned earlier, are very low. Because believe it or not, I actually, my costs right now are about 700-800 euro per month of costs.
So in terms not of like your living costs, you mean?
Yeah, costs. No, costs for the startups. So for the tech and the tools. That
oh, okay. Yeah, to run the
yeah the run business.
Got it.
And like OPEC. And I my target is to have costs that are less of 500 euro per month. So, because a lot of people are saying, you know, you need to have a lot of revenue, but it's all about profit. So I've seen guys that do a lot more revenue than me. And to give you context, last year, my total revenue, and this is also, by the way, transparent here. If you go / now, you will see the numbers. But my revenue for 2019 was about 51,000 euros, so not a lot. But of course, I took on a lot of that because my expenses were low, because my taxes were low. So, I mean, it's profit. It's not revenue. And then also the way you want to live. So,
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it is, especially when you're bootstrapping, it's all about focusing on profit. Just a minute to tell you about Productize. If you're sick of the client services treadmill, well, there's a better way, a productized service. That's why I built Productize. It's a private community and training program for people like you and me. We're operating a client services business and we're scaling it up using the Productize service model. Join our private Slack, our private forum, and get matched into your own small mastermind group with other members. Give and get honest, constructive feedback to grow your productized service business this year. Plus, get access to my productized course, which gives you everything that you need to start, grow, and systematically build your productized service business. The best part about becoming a member? No ongoing subscription. Purchase once and you get lifetime access to everything. Go to productizecommunity.com for all the details. And right now you can get 10% off by using this special URL, productizecommunity.com/podcast. I mean, in terms of launching a brand new product idea, we can talk about your approach to software development and coding very fast, spending just a day or two to spin up a new product idea. I sort of understand how that could go, but we can get into it. I think what folks would be more interested in is how do you find the first customer or first customers within a matter of a day or two?
Right.
Yeah. What's your approach to that?
Yeah. So one thing that helps me a lot is doing analysis before. So I usually do microdata analysis. And with that, what I mean is, you know, for example, let's just do an example. Maybe it's better to convey the method. So I have this software called UseCart, and it's around e-commerce. And one thing that we technical people do often is we overbuild. So we like build a lot of features because we go back to what we know, and we usually know building more than marketing. So what we do is we tend to focus on like adding features and stuff like that. So there was a feature on Cart that was around spotting trends. So one question that I do, and one way that I build, I build via Negativa. And what I do is this. I subtract a feature from an existing product that I have. And the question that I have for myself is, where I can put this feature, or to what market this feature is essential, it becomes. Because my realization was that, you know, there in terms of like impact, there's no better and higher impact that you can do in your like in your coding career than just building cores. So yeah, when you build the core of a product, you know, that's the most impact. Then, you know, you can build billing, you can build, you know, other things like alerting inside your platform, but it's not the same. Like what really shifts the things is building cores, core features.
Yeah, like the key thing that people come to a product and decide to pay for, it's because it usually, even though most products do 10, 20, 50 different things, it's usually just one or two core features that,
exactly,
that make it worth paying for.
Yeah, it's just a core, and then there are, you know, easy to have, nice to have, right? So there's billing, there's alerting, all these things.
Let's use that usecart.com example.
Yeah.
Like what was that feature that you identified?
Yeah, so it was trend spotting. And, e-commerce people are always looking for new products. And so I built a little wrapper around Google Trends. And I was, you know, it was a feature of Cart, still is inside Cart. But what I did is extracting that from Cart, and I made another SaaS called Trendly. And so the core now, it's spotting trends for this SaaS, right? And the markets now are, you know, you open a lot of opportunities. So it can be, and currently is, investors, SEO people, because they want to rank, you know, for keywords faster and before anyone else. E-commerce people as well. Affiliates for the same reason. So, you know, you can see how you go from one market to where transporting.
I think it's starting to make sense for me now.
Yeah.
So this is, as I understand it, you have this, one of your SaaS here is called Trendly.
Yeah.
TRENDLY.com.
Exactly.
And what that tool here does is it discovers trends, and this is based on Google Trends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and it looks like
Trendly, for Trendly, sorry to interrupt, but we expanded. We are not sourcing only from Google Trends. We actually source from stores, from Amazon, calls. You know, we basically scrape all of these.
Okay, awesome.
We have other sources as well. So we kind of do a lot of mix to find the trends.
Got it. So this is really interesting then. So Trendly itself looks really cool because it has all these different trends. I mean, we're seeing like food trends, e-commerce trends. I'm seeing one for like coronavirus trends, like,
yeah.
You know, and so then based on what you learned about how the different ways people are using it or the different markets that are coming to Trendly, you broke those out into more targeted niche solutions. So like UseCart is, as I understand it, it's basically like a Trendly, but it's focused on e-commerce trends.
Not really. So what we do is just extracting the feature. So I take that feature and I question to myself, you know, where this feature is core. And then that feature becomes a product. And that's just this. Like Cart does also other things. And the core of Cart is actually collecting e-commerce data. It's not trend spotting. But now the trend spotting feature in Cart is in partnership with Trendly, because it's, you know, basically via API, so it pings Trendly API to do things in Cart, whereas before it was just in Cart. So I basically extract that feature, and now it's a core product that can serve other markets and not just e-commerce.
Got it. Yeah. So like use Cart sort of like helps you spot trends like within your own e-commerce store, but you can sort of compare it to other trends.
UseCart core is not trend spotting. We also have trends as like a nice to have feature where you can actually spot product trends that we fetch through Trendlist API nowadays. But Cart Cores is basically collecting e-commerce data. So what we do is we track a lot of Shopify stores. So we have a lot of information about Shopify stores, products. I think we have, last I checked, 14 million products in the database, e-commerce you can search. So you can do, it's about competitive intelligence for e-commerce, basically. So it's another thing. And then we have Trendly. But I'll tell you what I did with marketing, because that was your question there. So what I did with marketing Trendly, basically, 1 year ago, one of my friends, Massimo Giacchino, put me on Microdata. And basically, what Microdata for me is just, you know, clues that your competitor customers live around the web. So basically, what I did is, you know, go ahead and go in all the places that my competitors were launching. So that can be like Product Hunt, Hacker News, Reddit. It can be like posts in relevant online communities, it can be Medium articles, it can be YouTube videos, it can be interviews on podcasts like this one. It can be like ads, including like really checking the comments below their ads, for example. So it can be all of these things. And, you know, I just, yeah, basically analyze this microdata, so what people were saying, right? And for example, almost all of my competitors with Trendly are just newsletters. So they have like a newsletter and they would email you trends. Instead, what I find out is that people consume things in different formats. So what I did with Trendly is we have a newsletter, but we also have a search bar and a platform where you can actually go into the web app and search your own trends. You can also see the trends that we spot on the web app because maybe you don't want the email. And we are, for example, now doing a Slack integration as well because maybe you work in Slack and you would like to have, you know, trends in Slack instead of email. And then, you know, all sorts of things. So that process of going and reading all the comments, all the clues left by your competitor customers really can help with product and defining the product. But with
what would be out of your SaaS products here, whether it's Trendly or UseCart or Target Bear or any of these other ones, like which one would be a good example that you can walk through of like how you did that? Like where did you first discover the?
For sure, Trendly. Yeah, for sure. I can actually read the comments because I have a blog post on this, but. For example, on product microdata, you know, there was a comment on one of my competitor launches where a user said.
I guess even a step before that though, like how did you even initially get into? Was it because your friend was telling you about microdata and like which website were you on where you discovered people that people seek out tools for tracking trends and things like that?
All right, yeah. So I had this in mind because I already had this wrapper on Google Trends, and I've seen that was seeing like e-commerce people were trying to find trends, right? And then I've seen also all these other things, all these other competitors launch around the idea of spotting trends. So I knew there was a viable market there. And usually that's what I do. If I'm not sure, then I do a survey, and then I have my like marketing friends that usually reply, and I can see if is this a doable thing that people can pay for or not. So that's the process around that.
Very nice. And so, like a survey, you would send to like just people you personally know, or you have an email list, or.
I do have an email list. Sometimes I send there too, but usually just launching on like on my Facebook would be enough because I have a lot of marketing friends and e-commerce friends. So
very nice. And so then you sort of identify that there is a product or a need in the market, and you're starting to see comments on things like Hacker News or other communities, or comments on Facebook ads or whatever it is. And then where do you go from there? Like, you see people are like complaining about something, or they wish that it could do something. How do you go from there?
Yeah, exactly. So the product, basically this process of reading comments, et cetera, basically allows you to build something where your competitors' weaknesses are now your UVP, right? Your value proposition. So that's what I do all day. And basically, for example, let me read a comment. One person was saying, is there a pro version where I can get alerts and manage my keywords and have a dashboard? Because this other product, they didn't have that. So what I did, I built it because there was demand. And, you know, just reading a comment.
And just based on reading those comments, you had a clear enough idea on what needed to be built, or do you ever have to do like more research or talk to customers or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm just reading one comment. I read probably hundreds, to be honest, of comments. And then from there, I understood a lot of things. For example, that not all the people in the target market like the newsletter format, that they want options, like they want to receive insights daily, monthly, or whatever they want. They value have an online tool even more, because if you paid attention, I said that this guy was saying, is there a pro version? So the keyword there is pro, because
it's like, can I pay money for this, please?
Yeah, and also it's more valuable than a newsletter, right, in their mind. And also around pricing, oh my God, a lot of insights. But let me tell you another way that this helps. It helps with marketing as well.
Well, that was going to be my next question, right? Let's say, so you spend a weekend building it, and then even though there are commenters out there, how do you then let them know, like, hey, I just built this?
Yeah, exactly. So for marketing, it helps a lot with coming up with marketing angles, and as well as writing great copy. And I'm sure you noticed English is not my main language. Italian is. So sorry about that. But for sure, this helped, because I literally, took note of all the comments and all the, interesting ones that I could build a marketing angle on. And I did a swipe file. And nowadays, even now, if you go to Trendly, you will see some marketing angles. And basically, these are words from my competitor customers, are not mine. And that ensures that also English is quite good. I hope.
Yeah.
So basically, for example, let me tell you how I come up with a marketing angle. So I read this comment about how Amazon has all the trends in the world because it has all the data from Amazon customers, and so they can just go and create a new product, and they are sure to eat a good product, right? Because they know.
Yeah, they have all this data. Yeah.
Yeah, but instead, if you are a small e-commerce, unless you just happen to have that product on hand, and someone, finds you and tell you that this is trendy, you don't know, right? So I threw that whole thing into a copy that I have even right now on the site, and.
Yeah, I see it here. I see the headline, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, but that's not the one. It's another one called David versus Goliath. And I came up with this angle because, well, as you know, as a musician, you have to be creative. So it just happens that, like, the day before I was reading this comment, I was watching TV, and there was a show basically on Florence, the beauties on Florence, and they were showing Michelangelo's David. So I took that and I said, this could be my angle, David versus Goliath. And I wrote this copy, and it's basically, I would say, 90% words of this customer. And it's called Here is Your Sling. And it says, it basically compares Amazon to Goliath, and then how you are so small, and how Trendly can be the sling to basically beat Goliath. So this is obviously something that helps me because, as I said, I'm not an English-speaking person as a first language. But also, if a with the travels, so because people share it.
Yeah, so well, actually, that then let's go the next step, right? So you can obviously that's a very effective copywriting methodology, right? Like take the words from customers' mouths and actually use it in your copy, so you can create a very strong landing page, create content. But then how do you get exposure? How do you let them know that this exists? How do you get that early traffic?
So usually what you do is replicating your competitor strategy. So a lot of competitors, they did launches on Reddit, on Product Hunt, and Hacker News. And that's what I did too. Because the target for this is just basically, curious people. So Reddit has a lot of curious people. Product Hunt has it too. So I did a lot of good launches on Product Hunt. I was first or second on Hacker News for a day. So that brought in a lot of traffic. And also Reddit. Oh my God, I do a lot of launches on Reddit even these days because it's free. And you just have to be creative with the angles. But
is that it? I've launched a few different things on Product Hunt. Most of them flopped, and then one or two, you know, did pretty well. And it was usually because somebody else like just put it up there and I wasn't even expecting it.
Well, you have to be intentional. You have to be intentional with your launches. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my question is like, what do you do to like optimize for say a Product Hunt launch or a Reddit launch or Hacker News?
I guess for Product Hunt, I'm very intentional. I basically build everything days before using Preview Hunt, which is a site where you can basically have all the things, making sure that you have all the things that you need for the Product Hunt launch. Then I usually, sometimes you post on Product Hunt and you go into the newest tab, not the home page. And then it just means you have to bug the Product Hunt team.
That is one thing I noticed. I heard that it, like sometimes you, like after you submit it, just send a message to their support and they'll like manually put you on the front. Oh, not obviously that won't work for everyone, but they do have some manual.
Because I have a record of successful launches. So, I mean, they want products that, can spark conversations and things like that. So, it's usually a win-win there. I just have to bug them sometimes. Sometimes it goes directly to jump page. So I don't know how it works there, but sometimes it works, sometimes not, and I have to ping them. But also with Reddit, you have to be intentional and you have to structure things in a way that are not against the subreddit rules, for example. And with Hacker News is probably the most volatile one, but they are like tech people and they want to know the behind the scenes. So I did a post like that, like with that flavor, and it went very well.
Like how I built this or why?
No, it was just Shoei Chan. I built this transporting thing, basically, and it went very well. And usually what you do there is you go and make sure that you start the conversation with the first comment. And then you have to be very active and reply to people. And I was always very, very kind and polite to, just thanking them for commenting. And then that's the other thing that helps because with this process of collecting microdata, as I call them, it also helps with handling objections because basically for example, by reading a lot of real feedback from my competitors' posts, I noticed a lot of questions like, how does this compare to, let's say, Google Trends? Or how is this different from competitor, right? And so for that, I was able to actually plan ahead my answer and just handle objections very easily. And that's something that also helped a lot with launching, because I basically had a swipe file with all my answers, and I would just copy and paste them into the people asking.
Yeah.
And so that helps too.
That's great. And so, I mean, you're literally doing all this like pretty rapidly, like building the tool, building a whole SaaS in a day or two, and like getting the website up. I'm assuming like using some templates and things, and then getting it posted on Hacker News and Product Hunt, and like within a week, you're doing these pieces, and you're getting early traffic coming to your site. Are you going back to those comment threads where you saw the initial insight about the product and posting a comment there? Like, hey, if you're looking for that, then it's here.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do not, because you know, it wouldn't be polite to go into someone else's launch, namely a competitor, and you know, say.
I don't really mean like a launch. I mean, well, I guess that like, yeah, like I wouldn't probably do that on like somebody else's Product Hunt launch, but like if you see a comment on a blog or a comment on a YouTube video or something like that.
I do, 100%. Yes. Yeah. And then with building fast, you said templates. I don't use templates. I, you know, in the years I developed my own kind of framework that allows me to be very fast. But that really comes, you know, I don't like frameworks, to be honest. I just use one framework on the front end called Bulma. CSS, like it's like a pure CSS framework, even Node.js. But I don't like, for example, Laravel. I don't like all these frameworks, and even the way I build.
What do you build in the back end?
I just have my own framework, to be honest, and I don't use pre-made framework. Like I don't even use MVC or like OOP.
Oh wow! What language are you writing in?
Yeah, I use PHP right now. PHP. Although I started years ago in Perl. I don't know if you know this one, but yeah, Perl. And I can code pretty much in everything, to be honest, because I believe programming is like a mindset, basically, where you know, switching from a programming language to another, it's like the logic will be the same, and then the syntax will change. So it's like I have build things in Python. I'm learning now a little bit of Ruby.
And that's the thing with programming. I mean, obviously it's so opinionated, especially these days with these trendy, you know, heavy-handed frameworks and everything. But at the end of the day, it's like whatever you are most comfortable with and can ship the fastest. And if that's a custom-built PHP, you know, your own starter template, like that's, or starter, you know, app, that's great, you know.
Yeah, that's a thing that I actually picked up from Ryan Kulp, the founder of Pomo. And he's a partner of mine on OneSaaS as well. But yeah, he had a framework, like a jumpstart framework in Ruby that he uses. So I basically developed mine in PHP, and that's a thing that allows me to build fast. And to be honest, I'm not afraid of like pulling a 24 hours straight, you know, coding session if I have to.
No,
so that's the other thing, because you have to be intentional.
Cool. Yeah. So let's get back to like, you know, bigger picture, higher level, as we start to wrap this up here. As you said earlier, you know, you have these different SaaS businesses, and sometimes, you know, you start to focus on one more than another, and the revenue of one goes up, revenue goes down somewhere else, and then it flips flops. Do you ever feel like you're missing out on like lack of, so if you were to say just focus on Trendly or just focus on UseCart, could you 10x that or 20x that, and maybe at the expense of your other ones? But like, do you ever think about that?
To be honest, I do think about that, of course, because that's one objection that usually people want to clients. Bring this up, but what they don't understand is that probably you know, I'm already 10xing on all of my stuff, because I'm like faster than the average guys, to be honest. And at one point in my career, I had a team of 4 developers that I lead, and I was faster, right? So it depends, you know, it depends on what you want to do. For me, even 10xing is not the answer, because I do this because I want to play more, right? So
yeah.
So basically, for me, it's a lifestyle. Like I don't want to make a million, although that's okay.
You wouldn't turn down a million.
but of course, I value, you know, my time more, because what I want to do and what ultimately I think I'm better at is playing, to be honest. So, you know, I want to do that more, and I play jazz. And so I do this to survive, basically, and protect my art. And I also had what you call it, a safe job teaching kids in middle school music.
Oh.
And I actually quit that job because it wasn't making me happy. Because, you know, music is what I studied all my life. I began playing music when I was 4 years old. Now I'm 29. And you know, dealing with kids that really, like, the music lesson is really recreation time, you know? And so you have to be, you know, don't push the other guy in the face, you know, don't do that. Doesn't make me happy. Maybe other guys, they are happy doing it, not me.
Yeah, it's one thing to play music. It's another thing to teach it, especially to kids.
Yeah, but that's the lie that everyone tells is that basically you can be a performing musician, where really the options for you are either play weddings, or at least in Italy, play weddings or to teach, you know, in the public school. And that's the
same. It's true. It's very sad too. I mean, I went to college. I have a degree in audio engineering. I thought that I would be working in music studios for my career. And I started in that for like a year or two in my early career. There in New York, I mean, they're literally taking interns and paying them nothing. And they expect you to work full time, more than full time hours for nothing, and then hope that the guy who is getting paid, he has a sick day and you can sit in his chair for a day.
Yeah, and also US is crazy with that, because like when you go to college to study music, yeah, I think my tuition at the new school was about, I was on a scholarship, but it was about $40,000 per year, something like that.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah.
It's insane. Like my thought process was like, okay, $40,000. Am I getting that back with music? It's probably never, right? And so, you know, that's what I choose.
Backwards. Well, I mean, I've got 1,000 more questions that I could ask you, but I think this is probably a good place to leave it. Of course, you know, folks can check out rubini.solutions, and we'll get everything here linked up in the show notes. Is there anywhere else folks can connect with you?
Oh, that's okay. I'm also on Twitter. I'm tweeting a lot at Mike Rubini, just my name, Mike, and then RUBINI.
Awesome. Awesome, Mike. We will get it all linked up. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm really impressed with all your work here, and keep it going. I think we're going to kind of keep tabs on you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Brian, for having me, and keep it up with the podcast.
All right. All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Did that give you something to think about? If it did, let me know on Twitter. I'm at CastJam. If you want to find show notes on this or any of the other episodes, or my weekly newsletter with new content, head over to productizeandscale.com. Now, if you haven't already, a 5-star review in iTunes, that would go a long way to helping other folks find the show. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time.